because chapter 6 was fun, but chapter 7 is even more fun. So what we got out of chapter 6 is the central role of Mordechai's parade. Central as God's hand having a real visible impact. Central in terms of Esther's parties having a real visible impact. Central in terms of the elevation of Mordechai and therefore the Jews in the eyes of the kingdom. And now we have chapter 7. I gave you the structure on the sheet after source number 9. It starts out with Esther having her second party and saying to the king, help, right? They want to kill us. Ahasuerus is livid when she points out Haman as the guilty party, goes out to the orchard, comes back from the orchard. We already saw the Gemara on that. And then Harbona piles on and says, hey, by the way, he's got a tree. He wants to hang Mordechai. Remember the one you like? And at that point, Ahasuerus says, you're done, right? Hang him on the same tree that he planned for Mordechai. Case closed. Chapter closed. All right. Themes of the chapter? Esther's plot coming to fruition. Divine manipulation. But here are some questions. Question number one for you. When Esther accuses Haman of plotting against the Jews, isn't she also accusing Ahasuerus?
No.
Why not?
Because we spoke about the fact that Ahasuerus just wanted to make them into slaves.
Ah.
And that's why it's so important that she says right now, I love that explanation because nothing ever made sense to me before. And it's so important. Like, why is she bringing up out of the blue about the slaves? So she's saying to him, I don't blame you. You were going to put them in slavery. I was okay with that. But he went beyond your rule or what he knew you wanted to do. And he wants to destroy us.
So Jeanette provides me with two forms of nachas here. Nachas number one, in remembering what we said a couple of chapters ago. And nachas number two, because that's a perfect segue to my next question, which is, what do you mean you're okay if we're sold as slaves? I'm not okay. I'm not good with that. When Esther turns to Ahasuerus, take a look at chapter 7, sentence 4. Kinim karno ani ve'ami la'ashmid la'harogu la'abed. I and my nation have been sold, right? La'ashmid la'harog ul'abed. That's not ambiguous. To be completely and utterly destroyed, massacred, eliminated. Had we only been sold as slaves, I wouldn't have said anything. What do you mean you wouldn't have said? I would have said something. What does that even mean? What do you think?
So I think according to that explanation, I forget who it was who said it.
It was the Malbim and then built up by Professor Yonatan Grossman.
Right. So I think according to that explanation, I don't take it that she actually meant it. But this was part of her strategy. Her strategy was saying, I'm okay with what you did. Of course she wouldn't have been okay. But that's part of her strategy because she wants to kind of make him feel you didn't do anything wrong. It's the two of us now together against Haman. Wants to do something.
So that could be. It could be she's not serious. Although I wonder what Ahasuerus is then thinking when he hears it. Like, does he buy it? I don't know. Other thoughts to answer this question? Chana, you were going to say?
No.
Okay. So that's a question that I have here. And then another question, which we've already largely answered, I guess, but something that we still should be thinking about is what exactly is the role of Harbona? And again, we have more to say with him. We're not going to get to him this week, though. So what I want to show you is, as I wrote on the sheet, Esther's brilliance with what she says to Ahasuerus here. Yeah, I wouldn't have petitioned at all regarding slavery, and how she manages to do this without accusing the king, for which Jeanette has already pointed to one answer. We're actually going to offer three. But take a look at source number 10 first. Source number 10 is the Gemara in Megillah, which I think is trying to point out the problem to us. Amar Rabbi Elazar, says Rabbi Elazar, Melamed Shaisa Mechava Klape Ahasuerus, the verse, meaning the text itself, in which she says, Ish Tsar Ve'oyev Haman Hara Hazeh, this enemy, wicked Haman. So Rabbi Elazar says, the text actually teaches me that she pointed to Ahasuerus, Uba malach v'satar yada klapei Haman. Along comes a malach and swats her hand to point it to Haman. The Torah Tmima explains that what he's picking up on here, what Rabbi Elazar is picking up on, is her unnecessary mention of Haman's name. She could have just said, Ish tsar v'oyev hazeh. Right? This enemy over here. Why does she have to say Haman? Because first she's pointing to Achashverosh. Now, I don't think that Esther actually pointed to Achashverosh, because that makes no sense. That would defeat everything she had been trying to accomplish. What the Gemara is trying to tell us is her accusation is an accusation of Achashverosh, and it's therefore a very dangerous thing for her to be starting on before it's angled towards Haman. So, to answer the question of how she could enter such a dangerous gambit, and to answer the question of what she meant about avoiding, you know, about not saying anything if it was about slavery and just wanting to avoid being murdered, I offer you three approaches. The first approach is Rabbi Avram Ibn Ezra. But in order to appreciate his approach, I need to hear from some of you who are using English translations. The last words of sentence 4, I deliberately did not translate them. Ki ein hatsar shoveh benezek hamelech. Somebody has a translation here. I would like to hear. Susan, which translation are you working with? You have the pink one. Okay. So the pink one. Tell me, how does it translate those last words after where she says, I would have been silent?
For the adversary has no consideration for the king's loss.
The adversary has no consideration for the king's loss. So that translation is going with Rashi. They're taking Rashi's perspective, which I'm not quite ready for yet. Does anyone have a different edition? JPS, Koren, Art Scroll?
I have a Koren.
Koren one. Okay, Joyce.
I would have held my tongue since the affliction would not have equaled the king's damage.
Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So Joyce has the affliction instead of the adversary. Devi, I saw you nodding yes. You usually use JPS, don't you? Yeah. You have affliction or adversary? What do you have?
Adversary.
Okay, so you're with Rashi. Very interesting.
The adversary is not worthy of the king's trouble.
Okay, so here's the difference. The word in Hebrew is tsar. Tsadi resh. You can legitimately read tsar as an enemy, and in fact, that's what it's going to mean when she says, ish tsar ve'oyev. Tsar means an adversary, an enemy, as Devi has, as Susan has. Or, tsar can mean affliction, trouble, as you heard in Joyce's edition. So, if you take Ibn Ezra's view, tsar is the trouble, the pain. Ibn Ezra is very literal in the way that he reads this. Take a look at source number 11. Ibn Ezra says, Ki nimkarnu lahashmid, we have been sold for destruction. The ilu nimkarnu liyosenu avadim ushpachos, if we had been sold only as slaves, aizimach reshes, I would be silent. Ki ein hatzara hazos haba aleinu shaveh beinenu meuma, because the trouble that we are facing, that's nothing to us. Even though there's nothing worse than that, other than, extinction. But we don't want the king to be harmed in his thought, in this plan. So Ibn Ezra reads it the way that most people read the Megillah, which is to say, the way that Jeanette had framed it before. If it was just about slavery, I wouldn't say anything. But we're going to see two other approaches, Rashi and Malbim, which help us to appreciate the brilliance of Esther's plan, as she has already undermined Achashverosh's confidence in Haman. So Rashi says, the way to read this is, this guy is harmful to you. He misadvised you. You are a victim of Haman. And so you get the translation of, this adversary, this enemy, isn't worth it to you. He's actually harming you. Take a look at Rashi in source number 12. Einenu choshesh benezek hamelech. He's not concerned. Haman is not concerned about the harm to you, O king. She'ila radaf achar hana ascha. If he were trying to help you, hayalo lomar mechorosam lavadim v'lishvachos. He should have advised you to sell us. V'kabel amamon and get the money for it. Or keep them as your slaves. The fact that he didn't do that says that he doesn't have your best interests at heart. Rashi is sticking with the idea that she wouldn't have spoken up if the advice had been enslavement. Rashi is sticking with that idea. But Rashi says, this guy, Haman, he's undermining you. He doesn't have your best interests at heart. Get rid of him. Ein hatzar doesn't mean the slavery. Ein hatzar Haman. Haman is not worth it for the harm he is causing the king. Or Haman doesn't care about the harm that he is causing the king. You with me? She's still saying I wouldn't have spoken up if it were slavery. She's still saying that. But the way that she frames it is, I wouldn't have spoken up because this guy at least was in, had your best interests in mind. Now he doesn't. And then you get Malbim. And remember Malbim's point, I've read it for you again in source number 3, which I'm going to only present out loud rather than in the text. But Malbim said that the original sales pitch of Haman was, these Jews aren't really a nation at all. They're a nothing. You don't even know what they are. This is Am Echad. There's some nation that's out there, that's scattered. And I'm not killing them. I just want us to eliminate their identity as a nation. We'll just have them sold as slaves. That was his original sales pitch to Achashverosh. So, Malbim says, if you take a look at source number 14, I gave it to you as a table, and then I gave it to you in the text also, because I want to make sure that we grasp how he reads word by word the speech that Esther gives. Esther says, Nimkarnu ani ve'ami. I and my nation were sold. Meaning, Haman is trying to harm me and my nation. You thought it was just some bunch of people out there. This is the queen's family. And I have news for you, as Malbim is going to say, his goal wasn't really to wipe them out. His goal was to wipe me out. It was really about me, and the nation was just a way to be able to get me without announcing that he's after the queen. So that's point number one. Nimkarnu ani v'ami. I and my nation have been sold. Number two, lehashmid, laharog, ul'abed. To destroy, to kill, to eliminate. He told you that he was going to have us sold. He wasn't going to have us sold. He was going to have us murdered. Ve'ilu lavadim v'lishfachos nimkarnu. And had he really only sold us as slaves, I wouldn't have said anything. Why? Because your word is the law. You're the king. Once you issue the order's out there. I would have been silent, not because I'm okay with it, but because that was the royal decree. The only reason I'm saying something now is because the whole thing was false. He tricked you into it from beginning to end. He didn't tell you who he was targeting, and he didn't tell you why he was targeting them, and he didn't tell you what he was doing to them. And so he says, this tsar, this enemy, this adversary, it's not worth it to keep him alive. Take a look now at number 14, please. I'll show it to you in the text. I'm just gonna read it out in the English. And then, you know, Moish had his hand up, although I'm not sure he's still there. Well, I think he's here. She made two claims. One, the essential sale was for her, that Haman's essential plot was to destroy her. And toward that end, he made a claim against her nation so that he could then cause that to her, saying she should die and he would kill her. By the way, I didn't bring it here, but Malbim shows it to you in the pasuk itself. She says, Ki nimkarnu ani ve'ami. She didn't say it here in this chapter. No, actually she does, I'm sorry. She does say it here. She says, Ki nimkarnu ani ve'ami, in sentence 4, we have been sold, me and my nation. The focus is me. It was really about harming me. That's what he really wanted. Continuing. Guf ha-mechira, the sale itself, that they were not sold for slavery, but to be destroyed and eliminated. That it wasn't about selling us, it was about killing us. And she also clarified with her words how Haman had tricked the king in two ways. by saying there is a nation, some unknown nation, and by saying let it be written to destroy them, that the king intended to destroy the form of the nation and its laws, not to destroy them, as we have explained. That was what Haman said. Haman sold them to destroy, to kill, and to eliminate. So if at any rate he had only tricked the king in one matter, not revealing to his ear who the nation was, I would be silent. I wouldn't reveal the trickster and abuser, since the mistaken decree was already released by the king. But not now, when the entire thing is a product of deceit. That's the idea that Malbim sees here. So, again, to get the key point in here, and then I'm going to come back to Moish. The point that we're stipulating here is to understand what it was that Esther was pulling off here. If I take Ibn Ezra's view, so it's not so brilliant. It's simply that Esther says, you know, they want to kill us. I wouldn't say anything, but they want to kill us. So do me a favor, you know, help us out here. Straightforward. However, if I take Rashi's view, or if I take Malbim's view, she has already positioned Haman as an enemy to the throne. She has already undermined his status with Ahasuerus and caused Ahasuerus to think that Haman's a bad guy. And so what she does here is not so much to say Haman is my enemy as Haman is your enemy. When she says Haman hara hazeh, when she says tsar, she doesn't mean my enemy, she means your enemy. And that's how she capitalizes on what she's been doing. Yes, Moish. You're muted.
I just want to thank you for the series.
Oh.
Because I have I've never seen the Megillah the way I have this year. Hmm. And I have never seen the brilliance of Esther in the meal. Because you're perfectly right. What she said to Ahasuerus was awful to him. It was terribly embarrassing to him. And the Megillah uses those words. V'hamelech kabachabato. He was enraged. He was beyond enraged. He had to go out.
Right.
It's all, and Esther knew that. This is not going to be a good idea, but I'm going to throw it out as a possibility.
Okay.
But see, when he came back, here is her genius. She put a bed at the dinner, and she's on the bed, and that's what he sees. He sees him lurking over her in a bed. And that's not his fault.
So that's an interesting question.
It's his fault. Everything else is Ahasuerus' fault. How could you put a creep like that as your second crap? But the bed, that's just Ahasuerus. You have to get rid of him.
So it's an interesting idea. The only catch is that it was, I think, standard at their feasts that they would recline on long, low couches like that. So I'm not sure.
It doesn't say that in the first meal. Or if it was, it wasn't of the same public type.
I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Okay. One last point. Dahlia, I see your note. I'm sorry to hear it. Hopefully we'll catch the recording. The last point that I wanted to note for you is just something Malbim says on Tsar Ve'oyev, which I thought was very, very sharp. And again, it's very Malbim. It's the last paragraph in number 14. Esther calls Ahasuerus, calls Haman, excuse me, Tsar Ve'oyev. So Tsar, we've already said, is an enemy. And Oyev is also an enemy. So why do you need to say Tsar and Oyev? So Malbim says, Tsar is a verb. Tsar hu hametzir l'chaveiro. Tsar means somebody who actively attacks somebody else, who pains somebody else. Oyev hamevakesh ra'as chaveiro u'mikol makom eino metzir lo befoal. Oyev is somebody who wants someone else to be hurt but isn't doing it themselves. They'll be really happy to see somebody get hurt, but they're not the ones who are actually doing it. So he says, what he writes here is, usually, if you have somebody who's not all that cruel, you have somebody who's not all that harsh. So, Mishe Noach Zari Kol Kach, Lo Yiyah Oyev Rak Term Hayoso Tsar. So he'll be an Oyev, he'll hate somebody until he becomes a tsar, and he's able to act against that person, and he sort of burns out his anger. But once he's done, once he hit the other guy, he's done. After he's already hurt the other guy, so the animosity is dissipated. Aval Haman Bachzari Yuso, but Haman in his cruelty, Hagam Shehitzir Vehera, even though he succeeded in harming them, Adayin Hu Oyev. He's still an Oyev. He's still an enemy. He's still hateful. Esther is highlighting the extent of Haman's enmity. This is not a guy you can make a deal with. This isn't a guy who gets, you know, something out. I don't want to use the term pound of flesh. I don't like that. There's Shakespearean for you, Maish. He's not somebody who you can just make him happy and then he'll go away. This guy is tsar, and even though he's tsar, he's also Oyev. He's going to continue to attack us. He's going to continue to hate us until we are gone. And that's what Malbim sees in the use of tsar and Oyev. So next week, what I want to do, God willing, is wrap up the chapter just with a little bit of a summary note on Charvona and Shoshanas Yaakov, Vegam Charvona Zachur Latov. I want to pick up on that. And then we move into chapter 8, and that's where we get to Purim costumes and Mordechai parading around the city and all sorts of other interesting pieces. So thank you very, very much, and have a good week.
Thank you. You too.